So I took the newspaper home, and my boyfriend looked at it, and he says, "Wow, you know, I was just talking to a group of students at some campus, I don't know which campus." He says, "But the girls are still fighting the same issues." Mm-hmm. So obviously, nothing's really changed. Mm-hmm. And how disheartening.
But do you think it changed for the time, just to, you know?
No. Okay. I think it changed for us, and I think it changed us personally, and those of us who were involved, I think we changed. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the guys may have changed. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe in their dealings with, in their future dealings with women, they've become maybe a little bit more open and receptive to dealing with women on an equal basis. But at the time, I don't think it changed.
And how did it change the women then that were involved?
By making us become more aware and more, it, you know, that what we were doing was valid, mm-hmm. and that our ideas were valid, and that, you know, we had something to say. I think a lot of it had to do with positive self-image.
Yeah. Well, do you think that it has a historical place then? Because I think that women now can look back and say, okay, these women weren't dealing with the same issues 20 years ago. As far as role models, and that this is okay for us, that, you know, this line about this is our role isn't true.
Oh, I think so. I think it's very valid.
Okay.
I would hope that it was valid. Having been involved. That, you know, that what we did, even if we touch just one person, you know, it makes it worth something.
Yeah.
That you can help somebody change.
You know, and a lot of people know the group, the paper, a lot of people do, a lot of young people do. And there's not very much history written.
How strange.
Yes. You're famous.
Oh, we got infamous.
Infamous. Okay. So then you think the group was effective or wasn't effective? Did it meet the goals that you set out, or did the goals change once you started? This is too wide of a question.
It's kind of wide. I think we were effective. I don't think we met all our goals.
Mm-hmm. What were the goals?
I think the goals were to educate women on campus about issues.
Mm-hmm.
Our goals were to get more women involved in education,
mm-hmm.
and to just educate ourselves in broader issues of political issues. I think that they started doing some of that, but I don't think that we got beyond, you know, there's that anger part where you lash out,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think we got beyond that. Because we were shut down.
As a group.
As a group.
Mm-hmm. Seems like a lot of people have gone on, though.
Yeah.
If not in group.
If not in groups, on their own, yeah. And I think that the group and being part of the group instilled the si se puede kind of attitude on the part of women doing what you want to do and setting a goal for yourself and going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't get beyond that.
You want to stop?
Yeah, stop.
Okay, so it was about
self-determination. But I think that if the group had been allowed to grow and nurture itself on the campus, I think that we would have probably formed smaller groups to go out into the high schools and to really start organizing and preparing young girls for their entrance onto campus, and we probably would have formed groups that would have helped freshmen once they came onto the campus and given them orientation and helped them and shown them that they did have a support group,
mm-hmm.
but we never got
and
to
they
that
had
point.
A legitimate place
and that they had a legitimate place and that their ideas and that they shouldn't be afraid to make statements and to put forth their ideas, that you know, they had a right to do so. But we never got to that point.
So because of the pressures then, that's why you didn't get there?
Well, because we disintegrated into thin air before.
Well, so it was largely due to the pressure then.
Pardon?
The antagonism of, you know, the way people were reacting to the group. That's why. Because that's really stressful.
Yeah.
Externally. Well,
external, but yeah, especially internally. And I think that, you know, that internally we also succumb to fighting amongst ourselves. And I think that, I know it alienated me. And it may have alienated some other people. And you see, and then on the other side of the coin, the forces behind the group are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's kind of like you have quasi leaders who aren't really willing to pick up the banner and keep on going. They just kind of let it fizzle out.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't have, I think Anna and Corinne had a lot of charisma, especially Anna, that you know, she was the leader, and with her gone, there really wasn't anybody to step into her shoes and keep on going. There were a lot of people who would have wanted to, I think, but just didn't have the wherewithal to do it.
So, do you think that, can you tell me what, like, since abortion wasn't legalized until 1973, do you think that had an effect on Chicanas? Do you notice, do you remember, you know, that being an issue? About not having the ability to, you know, terminate pregnancy, or, you know, was that ever an issue?
It was legal in some counties.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it was legal in San Bernardino County.
Mm-hmm. And did that ever come up?
Mm-hmm. Actually, not really. I think we were focused more on birth control
mm-hmm.
as opposed to abortion.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember ever working on that as an issue, but
mm-hmm.
definitely family planning and having education in that area available to Hispanic women,
mm-hmm.
to Latinas and Chicanas.
Mm-hmm. So was that a hard topic to breach then?
You know, I always believed in family planning. I always
mm-hmm.
believed in that, you know, in this day and age there's no need for the kind of unwed pregnancy. It was true then, and it's even more true now,
mm-hmm.
that you know, young girls are just not prepared. They're not getting the proper education. They don't have enough knowledge about their own bodies to prevent the pregnancy, or to know what's happening to them, and they don't have enough sense. You know, they get carried away by the emotion, and they don't stop to think that there's consequences that could happen from having sex. You know, teenage pregnancy rate in this country is appalling, and in the Hispanic community it's even worse. When, but there is this attitude, and I don't know if that comes from our parents. When I used to be a counselor in the Upward Bound program, because my goal was to start teaching young girls about this, was I said, well, we need to have this kind of a course for both the boys and the girls, and I think we ought to separate them out and have an honest dialogue with them about birth control and teaching them about sexuality. Okay, so the director of EOP agreed with me, and we contacted the Long Beach Family Planning Center and the Department of County Health, and we brought this woman. She had one of those strange names too, you know, that one of those sexual names that you kind of
sexual name.
Yeah, you know, like I don't know if her last name was Dick or Cock or something like that. It was really bizarre. You know, this woman, and you know, and. And so she brought she brought a uterus, and she brought, you know, a penis, mm-hmm. and she brought all these different
diagrams
and the actual birth control devices. And we had the girls there, and they went off the deep end, you know, and they boycotted the class, because just because we're blacks and Hispanics, you think that we're out, you know, screwing mm-hmm. everything in sight, and, you know, how dare you take this kind of attitude with us. Turns out the three of the girls in that program were already pregnant. We didn't find out until afterwards. But at the same time, you know, they refused to accept.
Because it's both ways.
Because it's both ways, yeah, it's really weird.
It's expected. I mean, that stereotype is true, though, you know? It is.
And it seems that kids take that real personally, you know, the how dare you tell me about this? You think I'm just going to lay down and, mm-hmm. and but they don't realize that when the emotion takes over, they don't stop to think about all these other mm-hmm. things that they're talking about. Anyway, so that was a kind of a strange experience for me. It didn't work out well.
And what were you doing?
And Cora, that was her name, Cora Cock. And poor Cora had to pack up and leave.
Pack up her little diagram. So what year were you doing Upward Bound? Around what years?
72, 73.
Okay.
70.
Okay, so then, let's see. After the Houston Conference, going back to the house, you came disillusioned and you kind of got out, right? What was that process and how did you... Then you started going and doing the ballet folklorico, or you were doing that before? Was that like an abrupt transition? Can you describe that?
No, I think everything happened concurrently.
Mm-hmm. All together.
All together now. Yeah, my attention was just about redirected, and I think the fact that we didn't have a strong leader also kind of mm-hmm. made it fizzle out. I had problems with Sarah, and, you know, I didn't want to deal with it, so I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of ideological differences between me and her, and just didn't, and they didn't have...
Like, on what positions you should take, or...?
I think personal stuff, mm-hmm. too. You know, there's a lot of personal things there.
Mm-hmm.
Meow.
Oh, then you started the ballet folklorico?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, when was that? It had to be 1970, see?
It's
when was
that? Conference was in 70.
When did, Yeah, it was about the same time. It had to have been early. Yeah, it was about the same time.
Mm-hmm. And you were just starting out on campus, and it was kind of developing all over, though.
I think it was developing all over. There was some at UCLA. There was already ballet folklorico at UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 1970. In 1970, I got arrested for because it was Cinco de Mayo,
mm-hmm.
and we went to UCLA to look at their ballet folklorico.
Mm-hmm.
And Chicanos on campus were we burned a flag there, and what else did we do? But then we stopped, and the Anglo students were boycotting, were protesting against the ROTC,
mm-hmm.
and against the involvement in the war, and so then as Chicano students we went, and I know Martha was dating a guy from UCLA, and we went to go watch them because he was in charge of the group. In fact, the guy is still dancing.
Mm-hmm.
I saw his name. It's pretty amazing how some people just don't move on. Because he was older to begin with. But anyway, so we went with him, and it was me and Martha, and we went to go look, watch them dance. And that's when the campus exploded into a kind of a riot situation. They declared an illegal assembly. And
mm-hmm. So things happened. It was an anti-war demonstration.
It was an anti-war demonstration, but we really didn't have anything mm-hmm. to do with it. In fact, what we did was we sat on Janice steps and we said, let's watch the white kids. let's watch the white kids protest.
And you guys got
arrested. And then we kind of got involved in it. It was kind of bizarre. Anyway. But yeah, it was 1970.
Mm-hmm.
So that was May. So I guess by September, we had kind of put together some kind of group. And because Rosa's brothers and sisters went to Lincoln High School and were participating in that ballet folklorico. We were able to, and the guy that was teaching the classes was real friendly with her brothers. We kind of talked him into coming to Long Beach State. And actually, he taught us for a minimal amount of money. And we got him paid through Chicano Studies. bare minimum. And we used to go into, they wouldn't let us dance in the dance on wooden floors. We always had to dance on cement floors.
Wait,
where do they teach tap is what I wanted to know.
I don't think so. I never knew that they had tap at Long Beach State.
Anyway,
it's not really considered a classical study, you know, it's kind of...
Anyway, so we're always breaking our shins in some classroom, some cement classroom, down at the bottom of the hill where they had the bungalows. I don't know if those are still there or not.
Mm-mm. I don't know. A bungalow?
You know where the student union is?
Uh-huh.
There used to be, going down the hill, and there used to be a bunch of old buildings.
You know, we have this huge new library right there end of the hill.
Well, those used to be little classes. The EOP used to be down there. And
the EOP's up by the library, on the wing of the library, or next to it. LA1, that really large one.
Uh-huh.
It's in there.
Yes, anyway, before the old pre-war or post-war kind of green bungalows, low-lying things,
mm-hmm.
and they had cement floors, so we'd go practice in one of those rooms. And did fundraising and that kind of thing for the group.
Mm-hmm.
And then just let that. So I guess it was concurrent. And so, because those three issues came out right away.
Which ones?
Of the Hijas de Cuauhtémoc,
mm-hmm.
they came out one right after
mm-hmm.
the other.
Yeah.
And this, after the third one came out, it was basically over.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it happened that same semester, 1970, and we did everything kind of all at the same time. It was a very busy time for us.
So, and then how long did the ballet go for? It was successful, right? Successful.
Yeah, pretty successful. I did that for several years,
mm-hmm.
till 1973 at least.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to go perform at elementary schools and junior highs and other campuses, Dominguez Hills and some places in Orange County,
mm-hmm.
some places even in East LA, we'd go and dance. We even made money. We went to Terminal Island and performed for the prisoners. We did all kinds of stuff.
So, and then you weren't involved in Match then at the time?
Not anymore.
Just
kind of dropped out.
But the group was pretty big. Do you remember what
they were? The Ballet Folklorico group or the Mecha group?
What they were doing, or was it kind of the same old thing?
Kind of the same old thing, you know. We'd go in there and kind of hang out at the trailer, but not really. It was Armando and his company,
mm-hmm.
you know, and his little girls and and a couple of the other guys, and kind of went into a little decline. I think that the kids after us, after I left campus, and certainly after Armando and those people left, became a little bit more involved. And then, of course, we had the dearth of the 80s, so
mm-hmm.
who knows what. I think there's been a resurgence of Mecha now,
mm-hmm.
and kids being more active
mm-hmm.
in recent years, as opposed to the 80s. And I think during the 80s...
Well, you know, I started in 87, there was a La Raza, just to have enough for Latinos and other Latinos to be in.
Was it real political or was it more social?
There's a political, I wasn't in it. I was in another political group, which a lot of people from the group would come because it was more political. And then, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then there was more, you know, cultural,
mm-hmm.
just different programs, but they have been more political and less over the years, you know, just kind of depending, it's who is in, who's
mm-hmm.
in there, who's doing what, is kind of what it has to do with. But there's a women's group that started again, a Latino network, but I think that overall, I think people are active. I think Long Beach is just a little, but they're not hooked up in the Mecha network because they're not Mecha, you know, that
mm-hmm.
conflict's there between women, not really Chicanos, if you're La Raza, and that kind of stuff. So, they're active, though. They do a lot.
Mm.
And they are political. some of them, and sometimes, you know. But I think there's different issues people feel they need to deal with. So, you got out of school in 73?
Mm-hmm.
And you just made the decision to get out.
1970, I just said, you know, this is a waste of time. Why? What am I doing here? I'm not.
Foolish.
I'm not. I don't remember.
Okay.
No need to. Oh, I guess it was spring, because it was summer.
And why did you start to work?
I got a part-time job. For a while there, I didn't have any work, so I was at SAG, Jobs for Progress, taking a training class. But, you know, getting paid for a minimum wage, I guess, like a job training program.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a part-time job, temporary part-time job at the Census Bureau. And then I got a full-time job with a property management group. And then I got a full-time job at East Los Angeles Doctors Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I went to Memorial Hospital. I was working as a secretary to the nursing department. Then what? Then I became a baby photographer.
Mm-hmm.
For the
You've done it all.
I've done it all. It was a strange job. So 88 cent specials. At, like when you went to Kmart and people would come up to you and try to get you to take a portrait, or they'd take the pictures of the babies for 88 cents for an 8x10.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a traveling job, so I'd travel from place to place. I did that. Then I got married and we went to Washington, D.C., and I did that. I still did the baby photography job. That was 1979.
Mm-hmm.
Then, 1980.
Who did you get married to?
Rafael Magallan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know him, so. Uh-huh. And you knew him
from Cal State Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
We had been together since 1973.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the EOP director.
Mm-hmm.
Not EOP, I'm sorry. Upward Bound director.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there he went to USC and he was the director of the El Centro Chicano.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that for a few years. And then he went back to school and he was working on his PhD. And he got a fellowship program. And this is right when we got married in 1979. And then he took off to Washington, D.C. And after a couple months, I followed.
Mm-hmm.
In 1982, I started working for 1982, I started working for Jerry Patterson, who's a member of California delegation from Orange County, the last Democratic member. He was defeated in 1984, I think. So he was defeated in his fifth term. But before that happened, in 1983, I went to work for Esteban Torres.
Mm-hmm. So what were you doing in D.C.? How long did you stay out?
We were there from 1979 to 1985.
Mm-hmm.
In the first couple of years, I was a baby photographer and I was
mm-hmm.
going all over the Eastern Seaboard. It was like a weekend job. You'd take off on Thursday and work Friday, Saturday. No, work Thursday. Now, if I left on Thursday, I'd work Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Or left on Wednesday and work Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got the job on the campus. I mean, on Capitol Hill with Jerry Patterson as a receptionist. And then when I transferred over to Esteban Torres' office, I was also his receptionist. And then after about 4 months, I became his personal secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for a couple of years, doing his schedule. And
well, so what year was this?
1983.
Okay.
So I did that for a couple of years. Because I was his receptionist from January to about November, because
mm-hmm.
his personal secretary decided she hated Washington. She was going back home to California. So when she left, they offered me that job, and I took it. And then 1985, so in addition to doing his scheduling and stuff like that, I did some legislative work. I worked on educational issues. And then Rafael got a job with the Tomas Rivera Center
mm-hmm.
as its director. And the congressman, I asked him if, because there was a spot that was vacant here for field deputy, mm-hmm. and I told him, you know, I don't, I've never done it before, but you know, would you give me the opportunity? And he said, sure. And you know, we gave each other like a 3-month deadline, you know, to say. I told him, you know, I don't know if I'm going to like the job or not, and I'll tell you in 3 months. And if you don't like what I'm doing, you tell me in 3 months. You can fire me. Mm-hmm. So.
What's a field deputy?
Field deputies. You work the district office, and you become the liaison between the community and the congressman's office, mm-hmm. and answer questions or represent him on when he's not available. Do constituent work. Keep in touch with the city councils and all the community-based organizations in the district.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
So do you like it?
I really like that job. You know, I think Stone Torres gave me, put a lot of faith in my abilities. And, you know, I don't think he thought really that I could do it because I was very shy and very, not very knowledgeable and very, certainly not very political when I worked for him in the Washington office. And I think I had that attitude of, you know, I was going to be a secretary, I was going to be a good secretary, and, you know, there's a need for good support people. And so I don't know if he thought that I would be able to do a good job, but it was one of those opportunities where I fell into it, and it just...
The glove fit.
Yeah, and it gave me an opportunity to grow and become very self-aware and very self-assured, more so than I had ever been in all my life. And I had to speak in public, I had to make presentations, I put together a couple of programs for him, I managed the office, you know, over the length of time, I managed the office when the district director was gone. I interacted with all kinds of people, from CEOs of large corporations to, you know, constituents, recent immigrants, mm-hmm. and handled their problems and took care of a whole bunch of things. Just a lot of them, too numerous to mention here. But it did give me an opportunity to do a wide variety of things, and it made me feel good about myself. And I think the congressman was pleased with the kind of work that I did for him. When it came time for the district manager to leave, he offered me, well, he didn't offer it to me, but I asked him for it, mm-hmm. the job to be the district director. And again, I gave him a 3-month option, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, I'm familiar with the district. I know the people involved. I know how to run the office. I've run it when this guy's been gone. And I think that I'm the best person for the job right now. At the end of 3 months, if you don't like it, tell me, you know, and we'll work something out. Either I'll go back to being a field deputy or I'll leave, one or the other. And I did that job for about a year and a half, mm-hmm. till I decided that, you know, I had no personal life. I had... None whatsoever. I'd go home, take a shower, go to sleep, and the first month I worked 30 days straight, mm. of being the district director, because I didn't have, there wasn't one of me, there wasn't a field deputy there, mm-hmm. to do the things that I did. And
well.
So I was doing both jobs. And the congressman was coming into town every single week, so, you know, our position had always been that somebody picked him up at the airport, somebody always drove with him over the weekends, and some staff member was always with him. Couldn't ask support staff to do it because they just didn't see that as part of their job. Mm-hmm. So I worked long and hard hours for him during that time. And finally, when my when it came to the point where I didn't have time to even see my boyfriend because I was too busy, mm-hmm. I thought, you know, this is it's getting a little out of hand. And then
too much.
It's just too much.
It's not human.
You know, well, not only that, I think if you are an ambitious kind of aggressive person that sees that as their career goal and who wants to be a politician because that's a perfect springboard to become a politician, after a while I thought, you know, there's a lot of lying and there's a lot of bullshit that I just don't like. And I would never want to be an elected official. you have to make concessions, and when you're receiving money, you're always put in strange situations. You know, it's always a, you know, I pay you, and you know, now I, or you give me something, and now I owe you. Mm-hmm. So there's always paybacks. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always calling in your chits for this and that, and you know, playing the game with all those people. I just, I didn't see it as something that I wanted to do, and I think I had reached my level of saturation with this thing, and I just ran away.
I
did it as long as I wanted to.
Yeah.
It was a great experience, you know, and he was always very good employer. You know, just he gave me a lot of opportunities. It was good money, and it was a good time while it lasted. You know, until it got overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. It really. So did